This is Inside Douglas County on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN. It's our daily in-depth look at people and issues that are shaping the local area. Inside Douglas County is presented by Concrete Builder Supply. Now, Inside Douglas County on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
All right, thank you for being here this afternoon. We're going to talk about emergency management. Wayne Stinson is the county's emergency manager. Thanks for coming in.
Thanks, Kyle.
We don't always hear from you when things are not going well, or, you know, that's when we do hear from you. A lot of the rest of the time you're behind the scenes, but there's a lot going on with emergency management, and thinking about just the past decade, it seems like we've gotten hit with one thing after another.
It's been a busy number of years in the disaster arena for quite some time. I'd be preferable if it slowed down a bit.
What's the county's role in emergency management? I think, you know, people hear about that, and a lot of times they think the government will take care of it. But there's federal and state responses to different things and funding streams, and it all gets real complicated for a lot of folks to figure out. But what about Douglas County?
Well, emergency management is a coordination, and in times of disaster, we coordinate, we get resources for agencies or county entities for whatever it may be needed for the response. In blue sky days, it's more of planning and preparing, trying to make sure entities and government is prepared for the next disaster.
And when you look at this, how much cooperation does it require between levels of government, not only when disasters happen, but in the preparation for when they do?
Well, it's interesting because a number of years ago, it was like trying to drag people and agencies to the table to talk about emergency management and plans and being ready for when bad things happen. Lately, it's not so much. I mean, I think most entities and people realize that we have had a lot of disasters locally and statewide, and we do need to be preparing for the next event, learn from the previous events, and apply that knowledge going forward.
You know, going back to the Snowmageddon event, I remember that day really well. You probably do too, leading up to it, because we were expecting maybe in a couple of days to have some flooding based on the amount of rain that might be coming in. And then there was this mid-afternoon forecaster that was kind of a lone person who said, I think it's going to be a foot of snow in Roseburg. And I looked at that and I thought, what? And I scanned around. Nobody else thought that. As it turns out, Mark Nelson was the only guy that was actually right on that one, at least that I found out about. And, you know, I was looking back and I was thinking, okay, I heard about this when my parents lived here and talked about, you know, some of the previous storms and things like that. And it's like, oh, we never get snow. Like, oh, wait a minute, we are getting it. I mean, that was just historical. And not only was it a historical event, I mean, you had people that didn't have power for 3 weeks. It was crazy.
It was. And you're right. There was one forecaster that got it right. I remember reading kind of the after action on that. He said either Lane or Douglas County is going to get hammered. And the forecasters we were dealing with, the National Weather Service, were calling it. We were looking at flood type events. And as it turned out, it temperature dropped just enough to turn that rain into snow. And I think in the last time we had a snow event like that much was in the 60s. And it's not something that Roseburg or most of the lower elevations of Douglas County is used to dealing with. And being without power, a lot of citizens learned that preparedness is their friend in that type of an event. But hopefully that's a lesson going forward as well.
So I'm curious, this is sort of a unique field. How did you get into emergency management? I mean, was it sort of something you stumbled into through other routes in the sheriff's office, or what was the path?
Well, it's actually kind of unusual. I mean, I started out as a search and rescue volunteer back in like 1972, 73, and just stayed with that program. And then after I graduated high school, I was offered a part-time job at the sheriff's office assisting then. It was Sergeant Norm Neal. And just kind of stayed with it. Then they brought me on full time. And then when Norm became sheriff, he kind of pushed me into managing the search and rescue program and handing more and more of the emergency management, emergency services. Of course, then it was called civil defense, off on me. And it was a real on-the-job learning. And I've basically been with that ever since. Recently, a number of years ago, we actually separated the search and rescue program and emergency management in the sheriff's office for a number of reasons. One, we're getting more disasters, and two, search and rescue is becoming more demanding than ever as well. So we needed the program separate and different people actually working in those different divisions.
So how many different ways is the county involved in emergency management?
Well, we do, I mean, like I said, on blue sky days, we do a lot of planning, looking at our emergency plans, bringing other entities in, cities, local governments, public works, and talking about what occurred in the past, how we can make that better going forward. That's called preparedness. Mitigation is how do we do things to lessen the impacts of disaster, and then response is actually how do we respond to disasters or emergencies when they occur in the county. And then, you know, looping back on that is the recovery side of the house. To be honest with you, I am still working on FEMA paperwork from the snow event a number of years ago. So recovery can take a very, very long time, especially when you're trying to get reimbursement for those types those large scale disasters.
I suppose that maybe some of the FEMA paperwork going back to 2019 and all of that, then you had the pandemic, which sort of, through the federal government, I mean, everything kind of shifted there. So there's been a lot going on. Now, you brought in a chart here, and I'm quite fascinated by it. You've got a long list of disasters here. This is almost like a geek level chart of these things.
Well, and, Kyle, those are only the ones that are presidentially declared disasters. Those are the only the large ones. There's smaller scale events that occur every year that don't get a presidential disaster declaration. But yes, there is. I mean, when you start looking at that number, we've been impacted a lot over the last few years. And if you look at it, it almost seems like there's more and more as we the last 5 or 10 years.
Well, and in fact, this goes back almost 60 years, 58 years here since the 64 flood, and half of these events are in the last 10 years.
Correct.
Wow. Now, 64 flood, heavy rains and flooding, that obviously had impacts in Roseburg. And I'm curious what you know about how they handled things like that with the infrastructure, with the government response that was available then.
I don't. I've seen the documents coming out of the 64 flood. I mean, that's a 100-year flood event. That's, if you look at floodplains, that's the last time, the 100-year flood was a 1964 flood. That's what that 100-year floodplain is drawn on. So it's kind of the big dog event of flooding that we hopefully never have again. I don't want to see that in my career.
Talk about 96. We had all those storms, severe storms, high winds early in the year, but then we had that flooding, and I think it was the highest precipitation in one day in Roseburg's history.
Yeah, and it just depends how it hits the basins. If it's completely across both the North and South Umpqua River basins, and we have mid or low level snows, and that all comes off, then we're looking at a flood event. If it just runs into maybe the South Umpqua basin or just the North Umpqua, a lot of times we can skirt a catastrophic flood event. But it just depends if that system comes over us and stalls.
Talk about some of the work that was going on in 96.
I mean, that was the year we had, you know, considerable amount of rain. We had had some landslides as a result of that. Learned a lot about debris flows and landslides in 96 and 97 that predicated, planning and looking at where homes are built below slopes. And trying to educate the public of those types of events, that's a real hazard in Douglas County.
And I recall one fascinating thing about post-1996, you moved from living on a hillside to moving on very flat ground.
I did. And, I got to say, my wife would love to have a riverside house, and I won't live in a floodplain after talking and going out and seeing people's impacts of their homes. And I won't live below an area that might be landslide prone as well after talking and seeing the impacts of landslides on homes and property.
All right, more when we come back. Wayne Stinson, our guest, the interview a podcast after one at 541radio.com. 1247 News Radio, 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN. Inside Douglas County, 1249, Lars Larson coming at 1. David Littlejohn has True Wealth Radio, part of KQEN Local Talk at 4. Douglas County Emergency Manager Wayne Stinson in with us this afternoon. As we look at these disasters and you think about what could happen in the future, what are things that people should have learned from recent years that maybe they have, maybe they haven't?
Well, you know, Douglas County, the citizens, volunteers are very good about helping one another. They truly are. We've seen that time and time again. When bad things happen, a lot of people come out to help. But the bottom line is over these last few disasters, you know, especially Snowmageddon, winter storms, it's and even, you know, the fires of 2020, you know, people need to be prepared. Something I tell when I talk to groups of people is, you know, I'm from the government, and the bottom line is the government won't be here to help you. And it's kind of an exaggeration, but the point that I'm trying to get across there is that there's just not enough police officers, firefighters, paramedics, EMTs, and volunteers to help everybody if they don't do something for themselves.
Well, and, you know, you think about Archie Creek, and that evolved so quickly late that night, especially early that morning. But one of the things as we began to track stories as we kind of got through the first week of that was, yeah, you had all the fire agencies, you had all the people, you had the sheriff's office, various folks that are paid to go out and do things, went out and did their jobs. But it was helped by so many other people who went, wait, I got a tractor, I can go do that. You know, and things like that where they just jumped in and went, there's not enough of these guys to help us. And in fact, you even had from the timber industry a lot of crews that were out that couldn't work in the woods right then because of the heat anyway. They jumped right in and had their equipment and were out there helping.
Right. And I mean, if you talk with Douglas Forest Protective Association, the timber industries are a real base support when we get into fires. But you're right on the point that the volunteers, the citizens of Douglas County helping one another is key in a disaster. And, just once again, pushing the point that people, I mean, disaster preparedness is our concern, but it's really the responsibility of citizens to look at where they live and where they recreate, where they travel, and try to do some degree of preparedness. There's tons of information out there for people to just start small and work towards a better preparedness culture.
What future disasters may be out there? We're painting such a rosy picture today.
Oh, yes. I'm a professional pessimist, I've told people. if we look at you know, look back to turn around and look forward, you know, we're going to have more winter storms. We'll have rainstorms. We'll have windstorms or snowstorms or a combination thereof. We're going to have more fires. I mean, that's just, I mean, the intensity and the number of fires we have, it seems like it's marching on. So we're going to have more of those coming forward. You know, when the next pandemic will be. I mean, we've saw what COVID did. You know, there'll be something else that comes out sometime in the future. And then, of course, you know, tsunamis and you know, the big dog of disasters that's kind of hanging out there is Cascadia. You know, we're overdue. Is it going to be next year? Is it going to be 400 years from now? But it's going to occur sometime.
And when you think about things like that, or even something that seems to be out there more right now about concerns about the electrical grid and the potential for lengthy power outages, you think about how dependent everybody is on technology, how so many things are stored only electronically and not on actual pieces of paper, you know, in file cabinets like we used to do.
Making me nervous.
Yeah. But, you know, how do we get ready for some of that where it could be not just, you know, a couple of weeks, could be a couple months or more?
Right. And, you know, we know we're preparing for and talking with the utilities, especially the power utilities, about public safety power shutoffs in times of extreme fire danger. That's not going to be countywide, but it will be, you know, areas of the county that are more at risk all those things line up, you know, high winds, low humidity, and just the fire potential being extremely high, that certain parts of the county could be shut down because of the potential for fire and the electrical grid compounding that. So you're right. I mean, everything's predicated on electronics, and that's run by power. Go to your local grocery store and look at, you know, can they sell groceries if they lose power? Everything's electronic anymore. So once again, it's even more important than ever that people have some degree of preparedness at their home.
So about a minute or so left. What kinds of things for the home should people be doing, have ready?
Well, they need to look at what their risks are. I mean, I'm definitely more prepared for a power outage now. Also, I don't have hordes of food, but I have more than enough to keep us. I may not eat extremely well, but I'm not going to go hungry. You know, and if you're in a wildfire-prone area, do you have defensible space around your area? Have you figured out how to get out of your home if a fire impacts or is coming towards your home? I mean, those are things that happen quick, and you need to be ready.
And what about Douglas County? What are some of the things that you're looking at, forward to in this whole arena of emergency management?
Well, we're updating our hazard analysis and risk assessment for the county. I hope to update our county emergency operations plan in the next year. We're talking about fuel and energy preparedness for both the county and cities and communities, critical infrastructure. We're always looking at improving our plans.
And where are some places people could go real quick, maybe website-wise, to just get some front-end ideas?
Ready.gov or even the Red Cross. You can spend a lot of time and learn a lot of information on Ready.gov about all types of hazards and preparedness.
All right. Wayne Stinson, County Emergency Manager, thanks for coming in.
Thank you, Kyle.
1257 News Radio, 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
Listening to Inside Douglas County on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN, a daily look at the people and issues that are shaping Douglas County. It's presented by Concrete Builder Supply. The show will be available as a podcast in just a few minutes at 541radio.com. So share it around and let others who weren't listening live know about today's show. Inside Douglas County is a public affairs presentation of Brook Communications. Stay connected with local news and information. News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.